Well, it was a fairly ho-hum state of the state for Missouri Governor Mike Parson yesterday down in Jefferson City. Happy Thursday morning. It's great to be here on KCMO Talk Radio. So, listen, Governor Parson, we have known since he took over as governor, is not one of these guys who is looking to climb a political ladder. Mike Parson is not somebody who is looking to run for president or be on a VP ticket. And, you know, that's admirable in many respects because he's not somebody who is looking for his next political landing spot. Just not who he is. He's not going to run for U.S. Senate. He's not going to run for president. He's not trying to be someone's VP pick. I know people have floated that out before as a VP pick. That's not going to happen. It's not. And that's fine. So when he gave a State of the State yesterday, it was not the rah-rah, you know, laying the foundation for something bigger. It was kind of your, you know, we're going to fix the roads. We're going to spend some money on education. And that was that. Now, the big thing that came out of Mike Parson's State of the State, you heard John mention in the top of the hour news a couple minutes ago, and that was widening I-70. And that would cost about $1 billion to do that. And yes, they may be seeking federal funds, but they believe they've got the money thanks to a $5 billion surplus in general revenue to spend about $859 million to widen I-70 here in Kansas City, in St. Louis, and then through Boone County near Columbia. So this is just a piece of a project the Missouri Department of Transportation officials estimate would cost $2.7 billion if I-70 was widened statewide. Now, doing what we do, I don't spend a lot of time in traffic, anywhere for that matter, but certainly not on I-70. I'm just never there during morning rush hour or, of course, evening rush hour. Just don't spend any time over there. If I'm out over that way, it's to go to the K, to go to a Chiefs game, whatever it might be, but that's it. Now, if you're telling me, for those of you that, you know, are Jackson County residents driving oftentimes in rush hour, that this is a valuable investment, I'm not against it. One of the few things I think the government should spend money on is roads. Like, you know, allowing you to get from point A to point B is a pretty important part of a state operating efficiently. So I'm not sitting here and telling you I'm against the state spending money on that. I mean, if they're going to collect our tax dollars, at least make our roads a bit better. Get rid of the potholes in Kansas City, widen I-70 where it makes sense, and away we go, John.
Yeah, some of the Santa Fe Trail wagon ruts are still in I-70 between here and Columbia, I know.
That's right. And then so, they go over to Johnson County, too, in certain parts.
This longtime resident would be in favor of that expenditure.
Okay, all right, so we got one. We got one. John's on board with Governor Parson's $1 billion on the roads. I'm not against it at all. You know, a lot of people are texting, oh, he wants to spend $1 billion. All right. He's sitting on five. I guess in a perfect world, they what? Cut you a check. But, you know, if they're going to spend money on anything, I'm completely comfortable with them spending money on roads. Now, what I'm less comfortable with was the other big initiative that came out of Governor Parson's State of the State yesterday. And what was that? That was education. Now, before you sit there and say, Pete hates the teachers, so he doesn't want the teachers to make any money, Missouri doesn't pay its teachers, I thought it was interesting that, Governor Parson's proposal to increase education spending came after a show yesterday where we talked a lot about things happening in the classrooms in Missouri, in Kansas, how much money we're spending on a per-pupil basis. Let me just tell you right now what we spend on a per pupil basis in some of our surrounding area schools in Missouri. And this comes from MoSchoolRankings.org and our friends at the Show Me Institute. The Hickman Mills School District spends $16,700 per pupil. Lee Summit spends $17,800 per pupil. North KC, $18,682 per pupil. It's a lot of money. Somebody said to you, hey, between state and federal spending, we're spending about $18,000 a year on your kid to be educated. If you could take that 18 grand and use it as you saw fit for your child's education, what would you do? Maybe you would send them to the same public school they currently go to. But maybe you'd say, you know, I'm not sure it's a great fit. I may look at different options for my child. If we're talking about $15,000, $17,000 of a voucher type program or something like that that I could use for my child. It's a lot of money. Yeah, teachers don't get paid enough. I agree. But if you look at the per pupil expenditure, you cannot convince me, and you're not going to sell me on this idea, that education in general, public education in general, is not getting enough money. You've got to look under the hood and see how that money is being spent. And yes, you'll probably find the teachers are being hosed at the expense of bureaucrats and wasteful spending. So the other major initiative in Governor Parson's budget yesterday, I was less enthusiastic about. Says here, more than $700 million, this from the Missouri Independent, more than $700 million dedicated to public schools, including $233 million for school transportation, and a promise that schools can count on it in future years, as well as $118 million more for the foundation formula and $56 million for pre-kindergarten programs. Parson also wants to set aside $250 million as cushion against possible education spending cuts in future years. That is from Governor Mike Parson in yesterday's State of the State. On top of that, more than $400 million for higher education, including almost $71 million to fund a 7% increase in state support for public colleges and universities. Now, that can go either way, because that may ultimately make tuition a little bit cheaper at some of these state schools for Missouri families. But also, you know, there's not a lot of evidence that these universities are doing everything they can to, you know, button up, to tighten the belt buckle, so to speak. They may say, great, more state money to spend. Is there something attached to that that says that they can't keep screwing Missouri families when it comes to tuition prices? I would tie something like that in to any increase in funding for higher education. Because if not, these public institutions are just going to take it and burn it. Burn your tax dollars on who knows what. Maybe like the Washington, maybe they'll spend it on some new transgender center like Washington University is doing. And then telling public schools, hey, don't worry about telling parents if your kids are using chest binding equipment at school to flatten their breasts to pretend to be boys. Don't worry about that. That's, of course, the story that we started yesterday's show with. And we spent a lot of time on it. And that was the story out of the St. Louis County School District, one of the school districts over there, where there is email confirmation between Washington University's Transgender Center at St. Louis Children's Hospital and the Parkway School District in St. Louis County, where you had chest binding going on with young girls in the school district, and the Washington University Transgender Center essentially told, and these are in emails that Fox News obtained, told the Parkway schools last year, don't worry about telling the parents. Tell the nurses, tell the teachers, tell the counselors at the school, but, you know, we try to not tell the parents about these things. I know that Governor Parson would have had to rip up his State of the State. But if you wanted to make a moment, if you wanted to make a scene, and I mean in a positive way, if you wanted to pull a Ron DeSantis and say, Missouri is where the woke go to die, that would have been a way to do it. That would have been a way to bring this up and say, hey, we are trying to be good stewards of the people's tax dollars in this state. That's what we are trying to do every single day. And with these stories coming out, this most recent story, you know, you butter it up. I'm not saying you let it rip like what we do in a talk show here, but you butter it up. And you say, we've got problems, and we need to make sure that parents are first in this educational system. And families are first. Not bureaucrats, not the governments, not the teachers' unions, but the parents. And I did not get that vibe yesterday, John.
We've got problems. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Problems.
How about you? it's got a good ring to it at 6:15 on a Thursday morning.
School spirit.
There you go. Mm-hmm. I love that. 5767710. That's how you join us on KCMO Talk Radio. Coming up, speaking of Ron DeSantis. Just mentioned his name. I think there are some pretty prominent folks on the left who are coming to this reality that they may not be able to just beat up Donald Trump, and that Ron DeSantis may indeed be the thorn in their side, and they don't know how to handle him. I'll explain it coming up next on KCMO Talk Radio. Got some breaking news here. Usually don't get that at 6:21 on a Thursday morning. The Chiefs are going to Germany for a game next season. Chiefs announcing on Twitter with a big graphic, poorly drawn picture of Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce, I will say. But anyway, it says, Chiefs Kingdom has no borders. See you soon, Germany. All right, admit it. Some of you are getting triggered by that. Chiefs Kingdom has no borders. We need borders, damn it. What's a country and a team without borders? I know some of you are getting, please, don't take it like that. Just a little fun by the Chiefs on social media. So they are going to be playing what would be a home game in Germany next season, Mark.
Kind of looks like a Star Wars poster.
Yeah, it's pretty lame. Pretty lame. I'll put it up on Twitter right now, at Pete Mundo.
Does have that comic book look to it.
Yeah, it's just, it's poorly done all around. But anyway, they're going to Germany for a game next year. We talked about it during the break. I would say it's probably the Bears and the Lions. Are those the two teams we figured?
Yeah, those are the two home games from the NFC North, the interdivision or interconference games. So, yeah.
You can't do the Bengals. You can't do the Bills. You can't do a division game. You can't do the Eagles. Those are the home opponents for the Chiefs next year. So they had 9 home opponents. So they're still going to have 8 home games next year. And then the game in Germany will technically be a home game. But since they had 9 home games on the schedule, they're all good. They're all set. We were talking about Governor Parson. Let's squeeze in Wes. He is in Gladstone. What's happening there, Wes? Good morning.
Yeah, hey, Pete. Don't try and trigger me first thing in the morning, okay?
That's tough to do. Tough not to do, Wes. Tough not to do.
Oh, thanks. Yeah. Okay, Mike Parsons. All you need to know about Mike Parsons and this deal over...
Now, in fairness to the governor, let's just leave the S off the end of his last name. Mike Parson.
Mike Parson, okay, that's how popular he is. You can't even remember his name. So all you got to remember about Parsons is he's allowing for an equity manager to make sure that dope sales are done per some racist quota or something, man. That's all you need to know about
him. Now, hold on. I'm not here to be Mike Parsons' press secretary, but you're talking about the recreational marijuana, right?
Yeah. They've got some kind of person in the charge of equity.
Yes, they do.
You were talking about it last week.
Yes, they do. But you're right about that. There's like an equity manager as part of the recreational marijuana rollout at the state level. But that's not Governor Parson's fault because that was on the ballot initiative that was written by a left-wing group. There's nothing the governor could have done to get that off of the ballot necessarily.
Okay. Thank you for clearing that up, but he ought to be all over this transgender thing.
I agree. And I think he's missing a moment here.
And here's the sad part. Just do what DeSantis has done. That's all you got to do is just follow his lead, man.
Yeah.
You know.
Yep.
Why reinvent the wheel?
There's a blueprint. There is certainly a blueprint. Yeah. And just copy it, right? It's like being back in third grade, Wes. Copy the smart kid in the class. That's all you got to do.
The best ideas are the ones you steal, but just give people credit for it.
That's well said there, Wes. That is exactly right. And that's where, you know, I think Governor Parson is missing out on some of these things that Missourians do care about. Especially when you got a prime example and Fox News is doing investigative work uncovering Parkway schools over in St. Louis. Exchanging emails with the Washington University Transgender Center about whether or not parents should be told about daughters doing chest binding in their schools. Ask yourself this to Wes's point. What do you think Governor DeSantis in Florida would have done if Fox News broke that story in his state yesterday, the same day that he was set to give the State of the State address? You think they might rewrite a couple of paragraphs? I think so. Now, speaking of Ron DeSantis, I'm looking at this guy and I'm starting to sense and smell a lot of concern from left-wing media. Chris Hayes is on MSNBC. Chris Hayes is one of these guys that quaffs his hair and wears his glasses a certain way to really try to look smart when he's really just a numbskull, for lack of a better word. So Chris Hayes, and you're starting to see more of this, but this one stood out to me yesterday. Chris Hayes put up on his Twitter page, quote, "I'm not the target audience, obviously, but DeSantis' whole vibe is so pinched and humorless. I really do wonder how it fares on a larger stage." Now, is Ron DeSantis Donald Trump when it comes to being able to let it rip on stage, go off cuff, be funny? No, he's not. I saw Ron DeSantis here in Olathe, and the one critique I had of Ron DeSantis is that he spoke too long. He did. He probably spoke 40, 45 minutes. He probably needed 20, 25. You know, you've got to be incredibly engaging to speak 45 minutes in a row and have people listening. Even Trump, when I saw Trump in Topeka, and Trump speaks for like over an hour. After like 35 minutes, I'm like, okay, I'm good. Like you, it's just, it's really difficult to do. But to say that Ron DeSantis, the whole vibe is so pinched and humorless, they're getting nervous. They are getting nervous that Ron DeSantis will be carrying the torch for the party in the 2024 and that they cannot attack him with the same kind of things they attacked Donald Trump for. And here's their biggest fear, that DeSantis doesn't punch back. DeSantis has not been going after Trump or anybody. He's just kind of doing his job. And the media is scared because the playbook they have, their playbook works for Trump. I'm not convinced it works for Ron DeSantis, and that's freaking him out. News is coming up in 2 minutes. We've got sportscasters melting down over an NHL player standing by his faith. We'll tell you about it next. They screwed the average fan as best as they could. Happy Thursday morning. Quentin Lucas is coming up in 30 minutes. So this whole thing has irked me since the NFL announced that the Chiefs and the Bills, if they win this weekend and meet in an AFC championship game, will play a neutral site game in Atlanta, Georgia. This is because the NFL is unfortunately led by too many cowards. The NFL allowed the Buffalo Bills to leave Cincinnati after the DeMar Hamlin injury, go home, and basically not play the game against the Bengals, even though it was pretty obvious within at least 12 hours or so that while we didn't know if DeMar Hamlin would fully recover, there was a strong belief that he was not going to die. But the NFL let the Bills go home, basically say we're not playing the game, and then the Bills get rewarded for that. The Chiefs get hosed, and the Bengals really get hosed. Because had the Bengals won the game, this weekend's game between the Bills and the Bengals would have been in Cincinnati instead of in Buffalo. So now it's in Buffalo, and now on top of that, if the Bills win this weekend, they don't have to go to Arrowhead if the Chiefs win on Saturday. They instead get to go to Atlanta and play a neutral site game in the comfy confines of the Falcon Stadium. So yesterday, tickets went on sale. It was a pre-sale yesterday for Chiefs season ticket holders. And I talked to a lot of folks who, were involved in this. And basically what happened is if you were a season ticket holder for the Chiefs, you got a pre-sale code. And at some point yesterday morning into yesterday afternoon, everybody had a different time frame. You had your pre-sale code. You would go to the Ticketmaster website, put in that pre-sale code at the time you were given, and then go buy your tickets to Atlanta. Now, of course, you may not need these tickets because if the Chiefs, God forbid, lose, it's meaningless. Or if they win and the Bengals win, the Bengals will come here to Arrowhead next Sunday for the AFC Championship. But Ticketmaster and the NFL wanted to get ahead of this. So they had this pre-sale for season ticket holders yesterday. Well, what happened? The entire thing was a mess. I've got personal stories from people that I'm going to share with you here on how this whole process went down. KCTV5, our partners on TV, they did a full report on this where they talked to fans who had complete meltdowns with the Ticketmaster system. Ticketmaster is the worst. Let's be clear about this. There is no worse operation. Well, maybe the airlines. The airlines wouldn't run a worse operation than Ticketmaster. But there is no bigger scam, no bigger monopoly than Ticketmaster. And they continue to let down fans, whether it's folks looking for Taylor Swift tickets. Of course, we know about that debacle going back to the fall. Or if you're looking for a hypothetical, theoretical Chiefs-Bills AFC Championship game tickets.
Jesse Limekuhler got his presale code from the Chiefs by email with a set time to buy today, 1 p.m.
The different tiers of tickets basically got to pick as the day went along.
But when the time came, he got an unwelcome response.
When I tried to hit 6 tickets, which was the max you could get, it said nothing available. I thought, oh, okay, well, I just need to get smaller amounts. And I went all the way down to 1 ticket, and there were still no tickets there. It's like they were all gone.
And he's not the only one. A viewer with a 10 a.m. slot wrote to us that he had to wait in line behind 2,000-plus buyers, then 20 minutes later found no seats comparable to my seats at Arrowhead for under $696, all of them resale tickets. Now, Chiefs season ticket holders get assigned their own ticket agents.
You have a one-on-one relationship with that person.
So Jesse contacted his and got an email address for complaints. Jesse knew they were getting a lot of them.
I felt kind of bad for him because at some level I knew he was only the messenger.
An hour and a half later, his agent sent another text saying everything should be back up now.
And so then I went out to the site, logged in, used the same code to go out and check, and there were tickets everywhere.
For only about $40 more than his usual Arrowhead game price. The Chiefs sent a statement tonight explaining, quote, early on in the presale, Ticketmaster noticed that a presale passcode that was not eligible for use had been distributed without consent. The tickets purchased under that code were refunded and released back out to the season ticket member presale.
It's a weird situation, right? You're buying tickets for a game that even if the Chiefs win, you don't know if you're going to it or not.
Jesse's amped to go wherever the Chiefs play and doesn't blame them for any of this.
My wife got involved with the whole Taylor Swift fiasco when that went down, so I'm not a huge fan of Ticketmaster, and I think I'm even less a fan of Ticketmaster now.
Well, you're a very nice man, Jesse. It's very nice.
Such a nice man.
Much nicer than I would be right now to Ticketmaster. I think Jesse's got to take a break from trying to buy tickets, considering he was caught up in the Taylor Swift fiasco and now the Chiefs fiasco, but that's probably a story for another day, and that courtesy of KCTV5, John.
Use of that unauthorized access code has been traced back to a laptop owned by Hunter Biden, of course, right?
That's right. Hunter's latest scam is going to be selling Chiefs-Bills AFC Championship game tickets on the black market or on StubHub.
How many you need?
Yeah, Dad's cut him off. He's got to figure out something now. Oh, my goodness. What a mess. Now, Jesse says there, you heard him say to KCTV5, I don't blame the Chiefs. I don't blame the Chiefs either for Ticketmaster having another meltdown and being a garbage operation. But what I do and will continue to blame the Chiefs for is not standing up for the team, not standing up for the fans, and not standing up for the community at large by saying and making the case against this bogus neutral site AFC championship game that could end up happening next week. I mean, everybody is getting screwed. From, yes, the season ticket holder who's had season tickets for 20 years in the front row to the local gas station near Arrowhead that would have had a great week in a business. But now, and here's you know, I think a real concern. The NFL sees this great neutral site look next week in Atlanta. There's no weather to worry about. It's a fast track, indoors, turf. Oh, it's going to look good on TV. Half the stadium's in Bills gear, half the stadium in Chiefs gear. It's got a little mini Super Bowl feel. And suddenly, a light bulb goes off in Roger Goodell's head for maybe the first time in his adult life. And he says, this doesn't look too bad. In fact, I could get used to this. And I think our TV partners could get used to this as well. Who cares about the fan? Who cares about the fan? And you know what they could do? Because there's been a lot of concern and a lot of talk about, well, what if they go to neutral site AFC, NFC championship games? What if a team ends up playing in its home stadium? Here's what they could do. You could have AFC championship games played only in NFC towns, and you could have NFC championship games only played in AFC towns. And that fixes that problem very quickly for the NFL. I hope that the NFL knows what a bust this was for Chiefs fans trying to get through with these tickets yesterday. I hope it, you know, moves them against this idea of possibly doing this thing moving forward. I hope. But do I feel good about it? No. The best thing that can happen, though, is the Bengals take care of business on Sunday.
Former Navy SEAL Sean Ryan shares real stories from real people from all walks of life on The Sean Ryan Show. Comedian John Crist.
How long have you been in Nashville? Let's see, 2018 is when I moved here. I lived in an apartment. I didn't know anything about it. I lived in L.A.
You were living in L.A.? How was that?
Yeah. Well, let's see. Good for my career. Send me to rehab, though. So that's pretty much the sum of it.
The Sean Ryan Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Sunday, and then it's a moot point. That's the best thing that can happen on Sunday. Bengals win, they come to Arrowhead, and this whole ridiculous neutral site idea is long in the past. 5767710. I know, you know, a lot of season ticket holders were reaching out to me on social media yesterday saying, hey, this Ticketmaster thing is completely a mess. Absolute mess.
My email had a different word. Two syllables.
Well, I'm not surprised by that. If you are caught up in this, though, if you are a season ticket holder and you are trying to get through, we do want to hear from you at 5767710, especially if you reached out to the team. Because if you reached out to the team, and I feel bad for the ticket agents stuck as the middleman here, I'd be curious to know what they were saying and how they were trying to explain this thing away. Because it's not a good look for anybody right now. Quentin Lucas will join me at the bottom of the hour, mayor of Kansas City. We got a lot to talk to him about. Got to ask him about the reparations idea coming out of San Francisco. They want to give $5 million to every black person. Now we've got a reparations commission coming to Kansas City. How about that? There's a proposal for you. We'll talk about that and much more with the mayor coming up at the bottom of the hour. This is the kind of data that should concern every single parent, frankly, every person, but certainly every single parent out there. And it's up on my Twitter page right now, at Pete Mundo. You can see it there for yourself. A new study was done here by a group, Institute for Family Studies. And it says here, the headline, how much is social media to blame for teens' declining mental health? And here's what the data shows. The data shows the following. The percent of depressed teens in the last 12 months. And it goes back 2005 to 2021. So it's done on a 12-month basis, essentially a yearly basis. And the study goes back to 2005 through 2021. Don't have the 2022 data yet. But if you go back to 2005, you would see that about 8% of all teens suffered depression in the year 2005. And girls were higher than boys. Depression amongst teenage girls, this is 12 to 17-year-olds with major depression, was about 13%. For boys, it was about 5%. So since then, over the last 15 years, you have seen an increase in teen depression across the board. But it has skyrocketed amongst teen girls. Look at these numbers for teen girls. Go back to 2005, and that percentage was 13%. It is now at 26%. And there's about a two-year lag on this number, and I highly doubt it's gone down. 26% of teen girls, 12 to 17 years old, who now suffer major depression. One out of every four. And before you say, well, COVID, now don't get me wrong, COVID's in large part to blame for a lot of things that have happened the last 2 years that were completely avoidable, like leaving healthy 17-year-old kids in their bedrooms with laptops. That was a bad idea. With their phones and laptops, what could possibly go wrong? There's no doubt our COVID response was horrible. But this number has been spiking since about 2010, 2011. It hovered. If you look at, and this chart's on my Twitter page right now, you look from about 2005 to 2011, the number of depressed teenage girls on a percentage basis hovered between 12 and 14%. Then it started to jump quickly in 2012, 2013. It started going up 1 to 2% every single year. It flatlined for a little bit, 2015, 2016, and then 2017, boom, it starts skyrocketing 20, 22, 24, 26%. The correlation is not really COVID. The correlation is the mass adoption of the smartphone. That's what it is. That's the driver here, the smartphone and social media apps. And I'm telling you, I understand my kids are young, and who the heck knows what our communication is going to be like when, you know, Claire's 4, Chloe's 1.5. Who knows in 10 years what their communication is going to look like and what we're going to be using by then. But there is nothing that concerns me more than that stupid phone and the ridiculous apps that you can access on your phone. Now, Mark has told us this. He got his oldest a smartphone for Christmas. She is, what, 10 years old, Mark? And you feel good about it?
That's right. Yeah, we can control anything on that phone right now. So I could go to the app right now, turn it off so she can't even use it the rest of the day.
If you feel like it. You could turn off the phone.
Mm-hmm.
You can see every app that's on that phone.
Yep, and if she tries to download it, we can accept or decline it. So we're not going to let her do social media. I'm not going to let her do it till 18. I've talked to my wife about this. I think she agrees. So
18 for any social media.
Yeah.
Instagram, Snapchat, the whole thing.
Yeah.
That's admirable. I hope that you guys can hang on to that.
Yeah.
I do. There's going to be a lot of pressure.
Oh, yeah.
A lot of pressure.
There'll be some fighting, I'm sure.
There will be. If you hang tough on that, though, God bless you, man.
Thank you.
Because I am of the belief, and I've been of this belief for a long time, that if Congress wants to do something to help teen health, teen mental health, instead of just doing whatever Big Pharma tells them to do and saying, yeah, we got to produce more pills for the kids because they're all depressed, block social media, put government to use for once in its life, and put a ban on social media, treat it like cigarettes, treat it like alcohol. It's not healthy for kids. And say, you know what? Some of you guys say, Pete, you're being big government. Yeah, I am. I am. Fine. I'm totally admitting that. I am being big government. Because if government, in this case, cannot help protect kids, we do it with booze, we do it with smokes, we do it with other things. Marijuana, where it's legal, the downside far outweighs the upside for our kids. And this is just another example of that. 5767710. News is coming up in a minute. Pete Mundo on KCMO Talk Radio, 710 AM, 103.7 FM. Stream us, of course, on your smartphone, smart speaker, and the KCMO Talk Radio app. Did you see this really disturbing story out of the Atlanta suburbs? And I'm going to tie this into a broader topic that I want to bring to your attention. But this is, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time on it because it's really sick. It's really twisted. It's probably not the time of day you want to be hearing a story like this. So I'm not going to belabor it, but I'm just going to tell you the story real quickly to set up another point. And by the way, happy Thursday. It's great to be here on KCMO. Look forward to seeing a lot of you out at Politics and a Pint tonight. You should be getting, if you are on the RSVP list, you should be getting a confirmation email today. That way you know that you are good to go for tonight's event at Outlaw Cigar in North Kansas City. Tony Lukdemeyer and Mike Sirpoy, two Missouri State Senators, are going to be up there with us in North KC. So these two dads who have adopted sons, these guys' names are William Dale Zulick and Zach Zulick. They were initially arrested in July of this past year, and now the accusations and the charges are coming out. Two gay guys, they adopted a pair of siblings, and they have been charged with incest, aggravated sodomy, aggravated child molestation, felony sexual exploitation of the children, and felony prostitution of a minor. These two guys are facing over 9 life sentences in prison if convicted of their crimes. It is incredibly disturbing. There's some media coverage of it, but not nearly enough, probably for political reasons. But it is just a horrifying, horrifying story of these two guys who adopted these siblings. And the allegations are that they were involved in a ring of child pedophilia and pimping out their adopted children to pedophiles in the Atlanta, Georgia suburbs. But I saw that Matt Walsh, and you may know Matt Walsh because he is now hosting the 4 p.m. hour here on KCMO. He's part of the Daily Wire team, so he filled in for Ben Shapiro all the time when Ben would take off. He's a big shot there with the Daily Wire guys, And he's now on at 4 o'clock on KCMO, as many of you have been hearing for the last couple of weeks. So Matt Walsh shared this story and tweeted this out, and he talked about this on his show yesterday. And he said here, quote, "I would never let a man who is not a blood relative babysit my kids." He says most parents wouldn't. And then he says, "But we let male couples adopt children and then act surprised when this happens." He says it's not surprising. Horrific, infuriating, gut-wrenching, disgusting, evil, but not surprising. He said people will pretend to be outraged by what I said here, but please note, almost none of them, if they are parents, have ever or would hire a man to come watch their kids while they go out for a date night. And he says, as some have pointed out, a very close family friend can, of course, be an exception. So I'm thinking about this, and I'm saying to myself, okay, like, we use babysitters a lot. Not a lot, but, like, you know, we don't have close family here. We don't have any family here in town. So for 5 years since Claire was born, and now, of course, we have two, if we want to go do something, we need a babysitter. So last night, Kate and I were sitting there, and we were having a midweek glass of, well, sometimes it's red wine. Last night it was whiskey, so it tells you what kind of week it's been for us. When we're both hitting the whiskey on the rocks, it's been that kind of week. It's like one of those, it's only Wednesday glasses of whiskey is what it turns into. I know you've had them, John. You got to go back a little bit. Now John has six beers a year.
Wednesday?
But he's had them.
When are you waiting to Wednesday?
Try to make myself feel better by waiting till Wednesday.
There you go.
I had to polish off a couple bottles anyway, so it kind of worked out well. And I showed her Matt Walsh's tweet, and I'm like, what do you think? Like, would you ever allow a grown adult male to babysit our kids? And we both agreed, no. Now, I say this as someone who, I didn't really do a lot of babysitting. I babysat a couple of kids who are middle schoolers when I was in high school. After school, single mom, she had to work. I babysat them probably 2 days a week for a few months. But they were older. They were like fifth and fourth grade kids. So they're not toddlers, they're not babies, there's no diapers. It's like, let's go to the park, let's play at the park, let's shoot hoops, whatever. So it's very different. But we came to the same conclusion, which is like, you know what? Matt's right about that. Like, would you want a grown man that you have never met babysitting your kids? No, you wouldn't. You'd probably want a female to do that. And that's just because human nature, we are, despite what people want to tell you today, men and women are different. Yeah, they are.
Talk about a bombshell.
Yep, believe it or not, they are different. And there's something about having a babysitter as a female take care of your children that after you interview them, and we talk to all our babysitters, we don't just meet them. Oh, Sally, you seem nice. Come on in. Come on, take care of the kids tonight. No, there's like a process that we go through. We meet them. We watch them around the girls. We talk to references. We do all of that. We don't just meet them and say, hey, yeah, come on in. You're all set. Yeah, you seem nice. We go through a process, as I hope that many parents would if you're considering or needing babysitters. But I just wouldn't feel comfortable with a guy. I would not feel comfortable with a male babysitter. It doesn't matter what his sexual orientation is. It's irrelevant to me. I would not want a grown man watching a 4- and a 2-year-old. I wouldn't do it, especially two girls, John.
Yeah, it's tough watching my grandsons. I get to play hockey goaltender sometimes. But to your point, like, I'll go out with my wife and we'll have the grandson, right? And he'll be climbing on something at the park. He's like, you know, running around. I'm like, he's fine. He's fine. You know, dad's through the negative reinforcement. He'll do that once. And when he hits the ground, he'll learn, you know.
Yeah, but he'll be right, okay.
Right? No, she's just like, he's up one step. I'm like, he's got this. Come on up there, higher.
It's funny how that works, right?
Yeah.
Oh, geez. So I sit there, and I she did tell me this, and I didn't know this till we were talking about it last night. She did tell me that apparently there are people called mannies. Those are male nannies, but usually they're gay guys. That's what she told me. I don't know anything about a manny. You know, we're not in the business of needing a manny. I want to say mammy, but manny. It's a male nanny, but usually they're gay guys, and it's, you know, a little bit different ball game, I guess, if they're kind of part of the family. But in terms of just babysitting, and the point of they're bringing this up because to me, it just once again signals the differences between sexes, and it's okay to understand that there are inherent differences between men and women, and what some of us are good at inherently, what we're not so good at inherently, and why it's okay to feel that way. When I saw this tweet from Matt Walsh saying he wouldn't let a grown man babysit his kids. And I'm like, you know what? He's on to something there. I hadn't really thought of it before, but he's on to something. And the other reason I thought of this, and this may be because, you know, Claire is a girl, but we go to swim class every week, right? She's been going to swim class since she was a year old. I'm not trying to have the next Katie Ledecky, but if we do, it's going to be okay. I'll survive. She's like, is the teacher going to be a boy? And I'm like, I don't know. I'd say 80% of the teachers are girls, but some of the teachers are boys. And I always tell her, I say, if you have a boy teacher, it's okay because dad knows him. He's dad's friend. I totally make it up. I don't know these guys. They're like, you know, 16 years old. Don't worry. It's one of dad's friends. Oh, okay. All right. Great. But still, she's always hesitant. She wants the girl teachers. There are just certain things at certain ages that naturally, especially young girls, but you could say it, I think, for all young children, they want that mother figure. They want that female mom figure for certain things, especially when it's things like babysitting or teaching or whatnot, where they're not as comfortable. Think about the classroom, right? You don't really start having male teachers. I can't think of any male teachers I had in elementary school. You start having male teachers middle school and high school. There's a reason for that. And it's okay. It's human nature. It's okay to accept and admit that human nature is a thing and the sexes are different and that they matter. That is a thing.
I had I guess there's an exception to every, you know, rule.
Okay. All right. What's the exception, Mark? Way to rain on my parade. Go ahead with your exception.
So I've worked in the church nursery at my church.
Oh, yes.
Since I was late high school.
Okay.
So I've known kids that are now in high school that were babies when I first started working with them. So
were you in the church nursery for the little kids, the elementary kids, or all ages you would do?
The babies.
So oh, you like, were in the babies?
Yeah.
So like, wow.
Like usually they don't bring them in until they're about a year old. Usually yes. They hang on to them until then. But yeah, so usually like 6 months old to 2-3 year olds. So,
but you were in there with helpers, right?
You weren't
flying solo.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. You always have two adults in there.
You got two adults.
So yeah, it's like that. But I think that those parents that I've
the Rolling Stone Music Now podcast gets inside the biggest stories with Rolling Stone senior writer Brian Hyatt.
Now here is my conversation with Jacob Knoll. Your story is an amazing one, and obviously you lost your dad when you're only 1 year old.
It was definitely a screwy way to grow up. I think that a lot of people never heard of who I am, and then they see me join this band, and they must think this kid must have just handed everything or nepotism kid. It's a gift that I have an opportunity to sing in such a big band like my father and my uncle's band, Sublime.
Rolling Stone Music Now, wherever you listen.
Worked with their kids would trust me to babysit their kids.
And I would say that that is a fair exception to the rule.
Yeah.
I will give you that exception, Mark. Outside of that, no more exceptions.
Thank
don't
you.
Bring one up, John. I don't want to hear your exception either. I don't want to hear it.
I had a guy teacher in sixth grade.
Okay, yeah, I did too. That's fine. That's middle school.
That's middle school years. No, but to Mark's point, he's talking about years of familiarity.
Yes.
And that's an exception to what you're talking about.
And right? I think Matt Walsh noted that exception. He says, as some have pointed out, a very close family friend can, of course, be an exception. So at that point, Mark, if you watch the kids at church, you're considered, in my book, a close family friend.
Family friend, yeah. That's
all right. Mm-hmm. We'll allow the exception. We'll allow the exception. Bottom of the hour, Todd Graves is going to be here. He wrote an editorial in the Kansas City Star about school choice. We'll talk to him. Coming up, I also have to follow up on the Blue Valley story. Told you about the Blue Valley story yesterday. Seventh graders getting wildly inappropriate classroom assignments. It has resulted in at least one set of parents pulling their kids out of this Blue Valley middle school. The story, unfortunately, has gotten worse. The school is not being transparent. We'll explain that next. Let me address two things here quickly on our last story. Number one is I was telling you about Matt Walsh, who's taken over 4 o'clock for Ben Shapiro. This was not a decision, and I say this because some of you are complaining about it. You said, hey, Pete, tell the program director. Well, that's me. I want Ben back. All right. Ben cut his own show by an hour. This is not a decision that we made. Ben Shapiro cut his own show. Just to take you behind the scenes a little bit, Ben decided he didn't want to do 2 hours of radio. He wanted to do one. So Ben is doing 1 hour of radio. Matt Walsh is doing 1 hour of radio, and that's that. That's the answer there.
See, and Dave Ramsey's kind of doing the same. He's been doing it a while, so he's bringing on people to help him out.
Yeah.
That's kind of what
you know, radio's too tough for some of these folks, John. They got a little tired of it.
Going a mile a minute might be an understatement. Right?
Yeah, that's true.
So he's got all kinds of stuff going on.
He does. He does.
Yeah.
The other part of it is if what your takeaway was from our last conversation had anything to do with gay men, you totally missed the point. We were not talking about gay men versus straight men. It was about men in general. Some of you are saying on the text line, Pete, straight men can do horrible things and do horrible things to kids, too. Absolutely.
That is the point.
That is the point. It was not about gay versus straight. It was about men as men. Men versus women is what it was about when it comes to babysitting. It wasn't about gay men versus straight men. You totally heard what you wanted to hear on that conversation if your takeaway had anything to do with gay. Because that was not really part of the broader conversation we were having.
My brain shuts down sometimes when I hear something. Blah, blah, anti-chief. Wait a minute. No, finish the sentence. Let's hear him out.
We all are guilty of that sometimes.
Sometimes that happens.
It's all right. Now, please, if you could, take a couple minutes to listen closely to this next story because it's a follow-up on yesterday. So yesterday we told you about the story to Blue Valley. Nobody else in Kansas City has reported on this because I believe they're afraid to. It doesn't fit their narrative, whatever it might be. So you're not going to hear this on the 6 o'clock news tonight, I promise you that. And it's the story around what was handed to 7th graders in a Blue Valley middle school around an assignment in a classroom titled, Are Bananas Worth the Cost? And this assignment in a social studies class covers some of the poor working conditions of young girls in Ecuador, where they have dull banana plants and they pick bananas and, you know, the bananas eventually end up in your kitchen. And it goes on to include the following story about a boss saying to a young girl who had bent over while she was working on a banana plantation, quote, there is a good place to stick my blank. These are the assignments being passed out to preteens in our middle schools. And in this case, this was in Blue Valley, in a Blue Valley middle school. And, you know, you can see the screenshot of the assignment on my Facebook page right now, Pete Mundo on KCMO. I've got it there. It's one of my most recent posts. You can see it for yourself. So parents started sending this to me, and one of the kids even went up to the teacher and said, hey, this does not make me comfortable. Like, this assignment is very uncomfortable. And the teacher basically said, sit down and do the assignment. So to follow up on this story, and I got this notification yesterday from some folks, that one of the moms posted screenshots of the banana assignments on the Blue Valley Middle School Facebook page. And it was removed. Now, who removed it? School administrator of the Facebook page? I don't know. But the post has been taken down. As a parent puts up screenshots of this banana assignment that includes sexually graphic content, and somebody deleted it from the Blue Valley Middle School Facebook page. On top of that, and I've got the screenshot of this, you've got teachers within the Blue Valley School District saying, what's the big deal? What do you mean you're bothered by this assignment? What's wrong with you? Yes, you heard that right. Teachers are literally putting their names on Facebook saying, what do you mean this is a bothersome assignment for you? How are you offended by this assignment? What's that all about? So think about this. You now have teachers. And this one teacher's name, I've got the screenshot here, is Kale Mann. Says, what is wrong for 13-year-olds to learn about these things? What am I missing here? Now, maybe you say the guy didn't read the assignment very closely, but it would appear to me that if you've got 13-year-olds reading about preteens getting sexually assaulted in Ecuador on banana plants, and you don't think that's inappropriate for 7th graders in a social studies class, I don't know if I can help you. I certainly don't want you in the classroom, but I don't know if I can help you. I mean, this is the ultimate sign of absurdity in our schools is what this is. And, you know, I've heard from folks on the Blue Valley School Board about this over the last 24 hours. They're going to look into it. They're going to do what they can do. But this is so prevalent, and it is so hard to crack down on stuff like this. You've got to be vigilant as a parent. Yeah, you're right on the text line, 1169. That shouldn't even be in high school. I remember social studies from middle school. It was catching up a little bit more on the Revolutionary War, getting a little more in-depth on the Revolutionary War. And maybe by the end of the year, you got through, the Industrial Revolution. Maybe you started poking away a little bit at World War I. Now it's like, let's make kids feel bad about the banana that they eat every morning because someone could be getting abused or sexually harassed on a banana plant farm in Ecuador. It really is amazing how we live in a society where they want to treat children as adults and adults as children. We don't call out the fact that adults are becoming more and more kid-like. You've got more people living at home with their parents still in their 20s and 30s. You've got people delaying marriage, delaying having kids, if they even do any of that. And we don't really think that that's a bad thing for society, even though it is. And then on the flip side, we want to treat 12-year-olds like they're adults. We want to treat 12-year-olds like their brains are fully developed, even though we know they're not till they're early to mid-20s. What's wrong with handing them these assignments? We want to give them the rights to, do chest binding and decide that they're going to be some other gender if they want to be some other gender. We want to do that and treat our kids as adults, but then we also want to accept our adults as kids. And you can't have it both ways. You shouldn't have it either way. We should treat adults like adults and kick them in the butt when they don't want to be adults and then allow kids to be innocent kids. But that, unfortunately, isn't fitting the narrative of the moment. And this is just another minor example, well, major example, but small example, micro example of what's happening in the Blue Valley School District. It's up on my Facebook page. You can see it there now. I know he's a young guy. I know he's a young guy. But even by a young man's standards, this is a ridiculous comment from Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence. So, of course, Chiefs are hosting the Jaguars on Saturday in the AFC divisional round of the playoffs. Now, these two teams met back in November at Arrowhead. Happened to be at that game for Kate's birthday, and that was a, pretty ho-hum game. You never felt like that game was really in question. But the Jaguars since then have been a totally different team. They have lost one game since they lost that game to the Chiefs here at Arrowhead back in early November. They're just a much better team. But their quarterback, Trevor Lawrence, this guy, I don't think he knows what he's in for this weekend. Take a listen to what Jaguars quarterback Trevor Lawrence had to say.
Obviously, the environment and the atmosphere we're going to play in is one of, if not the best in the NFL. I can't imagine it'll be much louder than our fans were here on Saturday, honestly. But that was when we were on defense.
Stop right there. Talking out of both sides of your mouth there from Trevor Lawrence. Stop the tape. Beep. Okay. He starts off by saying, great environment, one of the best in football. Can't be much louder than it was here in Jacksonville last Saturday. I watched that Jaguars game. I've watched two Jaguars games all season. They were actually the last 2 weeks because they had the play-in game against the Titans in week 18. And then they had the playoff game last week. And I wondered if the stadium was going to be filled for each of those games. Now, of course, the playoff game was full. But I'm looking around. I'm like, gosh, there's a lot of empty seats a few minutes before kickoff here. And then I'm looking at them during the game, and everybody's sitting down. I'm like, wait, what's wrong with this picture? Because obviously, if you're in the lower bowl in Arrowhead, you don't sit down. Never mind in Jacksonville for a playoff game. They're just sitting there, a little wine and cheese. A lot of transplants. It's like, what is this all about, John? And you're comparing that scene to what you're going to see Saturday at Arrowhead?
Well, you have to remember their home field advantage is so strong that they were the team being rumored to move to London at one point. How many games did they play over there 1 year? Three, seemed like?
That's right.
Right?
I forgot
just
about that.
Just a couple of years ago, it was like they were a team without a home.
Oh, that almost is a very good point.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot about all that. Yeah, they were going to move. They were going to be maybe going to Vegas and the whole thing.
Maybe the playoff game was dollar draw night, and they had some of the naval guys come in.
Yeah.
From the bases out there.
Yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right.
He can't imagine it. Well, he's going to find out, see.
Yeah.
I was telling you, remind me of the old 70s show, Mork and Mindy, where Exidor would always say, "Tempt me not, O shallow one." Dude, you just unleashed the beast.
I was going to say, not that Chiefs fans needed another reason. You know, everyone talks about how the Chiefs had a bye week last week. The Chiefs fans also had a bye week last week to rest their pipes a little bit before bringing in some extra noise to Arrowhead this weekend. So they had a chance to rest the pipes. The fans are well rested. And now you got Trevor Lawrence saying, "Man, I'm not going to be that loud. Can't imagine it being all that loud this week," kind of like it was in Jacksonville. And as he goes on the note there in his ridiculous statement, yeah, there's also a big difference. You being the home team, sitting on the bench while the crowd is loud is a little bit different than trying to call a play in the huddle as the crowd's going nuts because you're suddenly the road team, genius.
Yeah, he'll say, "Arrowhead's louder than I thought." I was like, dude, that was just General Wilson singing the national anthem. That's not the game.
That's right. I hope. Do we know who's doing the anthem yet this weekend? Have we seen that?
I'll look it up. I'll see if they have that info out there.
I it's probably too early. I don't think they've announced it yet.
Big man comes out for the championship, so he's not a divisional round guy.
You're right. He's probably not. He did the home opener.
Yeah.
I think he did the home opener this year against the Chargers, as I recall. Gosh, no one sings a national anthem like General Wilson out of St. Louis. Oh, my goodness, that guy. His pipes are unbelievable. I hope that he's in the mix this week, especially since, you know, we're looking at a potential AFC title game in Atlanta. Still makes me want to puke. And I don't blame, I don't know if you saw this, but Bengals running back Joe Mixon, he commented yesterday on the fact that the NFL is already selling Bills Chiefs neutral site AFC championship game tickets. And he said yesterday, quote, "To be honest, it's disrespectful, but we're not worried about that bleep. We've got a game to play on Sunday. Like I said, we're going to go out there on Sunday. We're going to do what the hell we got to do to come back with that W. And then we're going to see what they're talking about." I think that this is just extra motivation for the Bengals. And I hope they have that extra motivation. And I believe that they will have extra motivation, not that they need it, because they got screwed even more than the Chiefs on this whole thing. The Bengals have to go to Buffalo this weekend for their playoff game. If the Bengals had beaten the Bills, who they were leading 7-3 before the DeMar Hamlin injury, and they had won the game, they would have had this game in Cincinnati. But now they've got to go to Buffalo, and if they beat the Bills in Buffalo, which I absolutely think they can do, they will then come to Arrowhead for the AFC Championship game in a rematch if the Chiefs beat the Jaguars on Saturday. So that's how this is all going to play out. And not that the Bengals need extra motivation, but they really did get the most hosed by the NFL on this whole thing. And I think that they're going to be fired up. And meantime, you know, Chiefs fans are trying to buy tickets yesterday. At least season ticket holders are trying to buy tickets yesterday to Atlanta. And what happens? Oh, just another meltdown by none other than the worst company in America named Ticketmaster. It really is. I mean, between Ticketmaster and the airline industry, I don't know which one is worse, but they both absolutely stink. They are just bottom of the barrel. So we'll see. Saturday is going to be a good scene. Now they're talking about some snow possibly. So we'll be watching that closely. I can't get over these just cartoon characters in Davos. I'm looking at them now on CNBC. I love how they put the put the anchors in Davos. They put them outside on like a really fancy TV set. And they got their ski caps on, you know, their $100 ski caps on, and they look all bundled up there. They probably got heaters right behind them. You just can't see them on the cameras. But it looks really cool on TV, sort of, maybe, as the people fly private jets to Davos, Switzerland. 1,040 private jets landed in Davos, Switzerland, as these people preach green energy. What a bunch of cowards. Tim in the Northland. What's up, Tim? Good morning.
Oh, Mondo, I got three things for you now. I'll make them real quick, though. Talking about those 1,000-plus jets in Davos, you talk about your opportunity to go jet skiing. Okay. Number two,
hold
Al
on.
Gore.
All right. Hold on. Before you get to your next joke, you got a crickets for that joke. What's your next joke?
Okay. Al Gore talking about the oceans boiling. He's been hanging out with Jimmy Buffett too long. The smell of the shrimp, they're beginning to boil. And then number three, note to the Republicans. I know you want the logs for the visits to the Biden residence. Even if they did exist, they would do you no good. you know Hunter was there with strippers, and strippers don't use their real names.
All right.
Have a good one, buddy.
In the words of Meatloaf, two out of three ain't bad there, Tim, in the Northland. Two out of three ain't bad. You sign up for that every time. Yeah, something. Imagine going through the visitors' logs of who is at the Biden home where the classified documents are located, and it's like, let me think of a, geez, let's think of the best stripper names that I can. Oh boy, I don't know, like Rocky Hornball or something like that. Although that'd be a male stripper, wouldn't it? Well, who knows? Who knows who Hunter had in the house? Cinnamon Jones, you know, something like that. Madison is a popular stripper name, right? That's got to be a good one. Madison Stevens. Jane, J-A-Y-N-E, Jane.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good stripper
name. Spelling.
Yeah, you got to have funky spelling. Pretty, like P-R-I-T-T-Y.
Sprinkles with a Z.
Sprinkles with a Z. Crystal, that's definitely a stripper
Sparkles
name.
Sparkles Starbright.
Jeez. Yeah, so literally the FBI is going to go through Joe's visitor list at his home, and it's going to be like, what was yours, John? Sprinkle Starbright?
No, Sparkle.
Sparkles.
Sparkle Starbright.
Sparkle Starbright. It's going to be like Brandy Jones.
Sparkle Starbright plus yeah. one.
Or it's going to be a lot of single names, no last names. Jeez, yep. We got mm-hmm. Ginger and Candy.
There you go, yeah.
And Cherry and Jade. And Joe, do these people have last names? And Joe's like,
what are we talking about?
What's going on here? I didn't meet these folks. Destiny, that's probably a big name as well. It's going to be all these single name folks. It's like, but it's not like Bono, you know what I mean? It's going to be like Chastity.
Got to get a couple of silent letters in there, stuff like that. Zha-Zha, Z-H-A-Z-H-A.
I bet you there's a diamond in there, and Joe's going to be like, diamond and silk? No, not that diamond. No, different diamond. You mean Hunter's? Hunter was telling me about his friend named Diamond. I wondered what she was all about. Sky with an E at the end, right? That's definitely a good stripper name. Probably showed up on the guest list for who was at the Biden house. No wonder they don't have keep records of who was there. What are some other good ones? Lexi? Roxy? Come on, give me some good ones on the text line, 816-576-7710. China! China with a Y! China! As Trump would say. All these people just happen to be on the guest list. Oh, you mean the guest list disappeared? Oh, gosh, okay. Can't imagine why. I wonder what that's all about. Jeez, you got me. Tim's got me going in a million different directions now after that call. Eesh, John.
You can look this one up in the NFL, Cincinnati, or maybe in Cleveland. Anyway, had a receiver. His name was Fair Hooker.
Oh,
you know what? You not.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah,
that's
Fair
funny.
Hooker.
Fair Hooker. Yeah, I found him here.
There he is.
Fair Hooker.
Bengals or Browns? I couldn't remember. I just see a uniform color in my head.
Fifth round draft pick mm-hmm. by the Browns in yeah. the 69 draft.
Okay.
So that was even before Icky Woods.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was before Icky.
Oh, gosh almighty. This
is lit.
Woo, boy. All right. Speaking of Joe, this was put together by my friends at RNC Research yesterday. Because, you know, earlier this week, he was waxing poetic on Martin Luther King Jr. Day about our first Black female Supreme Court justice, right? In Ketanji Brown Jackson. But that name, that's a name that's always given Joe a little bit of trouble, you know? It's really just been one that he, for whatever reason, can't get to land right.
Those are the words of Ketanji Brown Jackson, our Supreme Court justice.
Even when he said it right, he kind of said drown, Ketanji Brown Jackson. It's kind of what he said. So they put together a little montage of Joe messing up Ketanji's name. Let's take a listen.
Ketanji Brown Jackson in the nomination of Ketanji. Well, you saw her. I guess you saw Justice Brown. Justice Brown Jackson.
Those are the words of Ketanji Brown Jackson.
Oh,
our Supreme Court
goodness
Justice.
Goodness gracious. Oh, God. It's like the other day when he screwed up the happy birthday song.
Happy birthday, dear Valvin. Happy birthday to you.
When we look back on the administration and look at the best moments, the butchering of the birthday is going to be right up there for me. When he's trying to sing a happy birthday to Andrea King, who is Martin Luther King III's wife, and he didn't come close, man.
Happy birthday, dear Valvin. Happy birthday to you.
Larry.
You know what that reminds me of, too? That reminds me of when he was here in town in 2021, and he forgot Quentin Lucas's name. You guys, you remember this?
Under the leadership of mayors like, you know, our mayor here. KC Water has going to replace all known.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is that, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.
Service lines is Kansas City, but there's more work to be done in the region.
Under the leader of folks like, well, you know, our mayor here. Oh, jeez. The gift that keeps on giving at the expense of the American people.
When you have sports mixed with your pop culture, along with humor and celebrity interviews, your earbuds are enjoying the Rich Eisen Show.
Kevin Millar, we're all paying rent in Ohtani's world, right?
And the Dodgers world. Game is healthy. Game is good. And, you know, I get asked a lot, is that good for baseball? Yeah, it's good for baseball. This is definitely the team to beat, because that should be your next correction, Richie, is that, is this World Series a bust for the Dodgers and Dave Roberts?
Hell yeah. Search for the Rich Eisen Show on YouTube or wherever you listen.